True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. And if you'd like to skip the intro or move to any specific part of the podcast, please refer to the timestamps listed in the episode description. Thank you. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. It is February 6th. We're finally in February. We're on our way through 2025, making our way through, trekking along. It's nice to know this is a short month and we're going to be in March.
I feel like slogging along is, it's like, you know, if you have like skis and you try to walk through the snow, it's like that.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to be in March before you know it. And that's when my birthday is. And then it maybe starts getting a little nicer here where it's winter and things are going to be looking up. I'm confident that things are going to be looking up by then, maybe, hopefully.
Well, I've got a vacation planned in March to Thailand, hopefully, if it goes ahead. So that's surely going to be a good month.
Yes. Olivia's back to her traveling. Her traveling bullshit.
This is a trip that's been it has actually. But it's this trip's been planned for a long time and I wasn't sure if it was gonna go ahead, but now it seems like it might be. So anyway, I'll keep you posted. Yep, fingers crossed. It's tight. Like, even though I know we talk about how the time drags, sometimes time flies and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh my god, I'm going in a few weeks, I've got nothing planned. So
you should make like travel itineraries for all the trips that you've got on that we've talked about on the podcast, because people do ask us, like people have asked me about New York and I feel bad because I haven't gone to the city since before the pandemic, really. And also I'm just not like young and spry anymore. I know I'm like not old either, but like I'm not going to the city to go out and drink and party anymore. So when people ask me for recommendations, I'm like, I mean, I know I live close to the city, but I haven't gone in forever. And I'm literally like, Olivia has actually been to the city like as a tourist more recently than me. So let's get some recs from her.
I am really going to one place in Thailand. We're going to an island called Koh Samui, which is like, so I guess it's a little bit niche, but if anyone cares and wants to hear any information, let me know and I'll give you my recommendations after I get back.
Yeah, but even when you went to like Japan and all the cool stuff. Yeah,
and that was a big proper itinerary. Like, we did a lot in Japan because we had to cram so much in. I think we were there for 8 days, so we crammed so much in. So, maybe I should do a little bit of a summary when I get back.
Patreon bonus itineraries.
It can be a little side hustle.
Yeah, I could do like breweries in like the New England area, like little New England East Coast day trips, stuff like that. Sometimes people do ask me for recommendations for that. And then I feel really good because I'm like, okay, I know exactly what to tell these people. But when people ask me about the city, I'm like, I have no idea anymore. I don't know what's cool.
Before we get into today's episode, we just wanted to share a podcast that Stephanie and I have both been loving. Relationships, whether you're single, dating, or committed, can feel like a constant learning curve. The Sabrina Zoha Show is here to help you navigate it all with no BS, real talk that empowers you to build the healthy, fulfilling connections that you deserve. Hosted by Sabrina Zoha, this growth-minded podcast has built a thriving online community dedicated to helping people take control of their love lives and personal growth. With over 10 million downloads in its first year, a 4.9-star rating on Spotify and Apple, and ranking in the top 0.05% globally, the Sabrina Zoha Show delivers clear, actionable insights backed by psychology and neuroscience.
I've said before, I love listening to like lifestyle relationship podcasts. So I was really happy to have found this one because sometimes I need a little break from all the true crime just to change it up a little. Each episode dives deep into the realities of modern relationships, helping you understand your anxiety, break unhealthy patterns, and respond with confidence in everything from dating dilemmas to long-term relationship challenges. This show is more than just advice. It's about empowering you to reconnect with your authentic self and make relationship choices from a whole, worthy, and confident place. If you're ready to stop second-guessing yourself and start showing up fully in your relationships, tune into the new episodes every Friday of the Sabrina Zoha Show, because love in all forms should never feel like a guessing game. All right, so we're just going to get into it today because we've got a couple updates as well with three different cases that we talked about in the past that I'm sure you guys will want to know about. So we're going to start with the first big update that we have, and that's with the Ellen Greenberg case. And as a little refresher, she died in 2011. She had 20 stab wounds, including 10 to her back and neck, and she was found with a knife in her chest. But somehow they ruled her death a suicide, which has been very controversial. We've posted about this case on our Instagram. Obviously, we did an episode on it, but a lot of people have always side-eyed her. Was he her ex at the time?
No, they were still together at the time. They were fiancé. Yeah, they were still together. Getting married. Yeah, they were getting married.
Right. So a lot of people have been side-eyeing her at the time fiancé because everyone's like, how do you stab yourself in the back 10 times? So her family has been fighting for years, ever since this happened, to be like, her death was not a suicide. Past week, a judge finally ruled that a 2022 lawsuit filed by her parents against the city of Philadelphia could move to trial. And the forensic pathologist with the city medical examiner's office, Dr. Marlon Osborne, backtracked on his suicide ruling, according to legal documents. He said, "It's my professional opinion, Ellen's manner of death should be designated as something other than suicide. Since issuing the amended death certificate, I've become aware of additional information I did not have at the time of issuing the amended death certificate, which may have impacted my opinion." And this information is from an article. It says the Greenbergs entered a Philadelphia courtroom Monday morning to begin the trial in their case, which accuses local officials and the medical examiner's office, including Osborne, of covering up their daughter's death and participating in a concealed conspiracy for the purpose of disguising Ellen's homicide as a suicide. The city will pay Dr. Josh and Sandy Greenberg as an undisclosed amount in Monday's settlement.
I think that basically the parents have got a settlement, which means that the investigation can be reopened. So I feel like the settlement may be. So the settlement, this is from Local 21 News. It says, "The settlement to reopen the investigation into Ellen's death came as a judge allowed a civil lawsuit against the city of Philadelphia to move forward." So a little bit confusing within terms because I guess you... financial settlement, and we're not entirely sure of all the details about what is going on, but the lawsuit is now able to proceed. The medical examiner has backtracked, and it feels like it will be ongoing for the next foreseeable future.
Yeah, so great news for her family because they've been fighting for a very long time for justice for their daughter. Because, I mean, I have to agree, it does not seem right that that is a suicide.
Yeah, I think I did say in the episode I believed it could have been a suicide, but only because I have seen some crazy, crazy suicide methods in the past. Like there was a man, for example, who cut off his own head with a chainsaw. Like I feel like there's always the possibility that it could be a suicide, even though it seems unlikely. But now that the medical examiner has come out and said that, my opinion has probably changed more so to this being something else. I don't know. But then I also wonder in terms of when they're saying a concealed conspiracy, like why would they cover it up? What is the interest of the officials to cover it up? Was there some
financial... Well, I wonder if it was just like they made a mistake at first and now they're like, we didn't make a mistake.
Yeah. And rather than kind of owning it, they've all tried to be like, no.
Like not so much like a cover up covering something up, but more like, oops. Yeah. And now they just kind of have to double down.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I think.
So there are two other quick updates in cases that we covered. One of our very first episodes, I think, way back in 2020 possibly, was about Evelyn Boswell. She was a little
girl. Seems like ages ago.
I know.
I mean, it is.
Maybe, like, we always encourage people to listen to our old episodes if they're not familiar, but maybe don't listen to them because we've learned a lot. But basically, Evelyn went missing and she wasn't reported missing for a long time. Her mother was Megan Boswell, and... her remains were eventually found in like a shed on the property. The trial has just started. So 5 years basically after Evelyn died, the trial has started. That is ongoing now. Like as we speak, it's ongoing. It's meant to run for around 3 weeks. We've had questions as if we cover it. I think we will just, we'll kind of watch it and maybe do a summary at the end just because.
Even just like redoing like our... maybe just do the whole thing again because other episodes
we could maybe
so
do a
old.
Recap of the case and the trial, but the trial started this week. It's due to run for 3 weeks, which will be basically till the end of February because we record obviously a week before episodes are released, so end of February, so we will definitely give you updates on that as they happen.
I really can't believe how long it has taken.
Yeah. We were just in our Patreon that we just recorded, we spoke about Colin Griffith, who committed a murder in was involved in a death. He didn't commit a murder because he's not guilty, but involved in a death in September 2024, and his trial has just finished. So, like, literally a few months, whereas this is 5 years. It's wild.
I think I do remember there was, like, a lot of back and forth with, like, I don't know if it was, like, psych evaluations for Megan, but I remember there was something going on that was, like, delaying it.
And I feel like she took a while to also get arrested. Like, she wasn't arrested straight away. So, but it has been a long process.
Mm-hmm.
The last update that we have is from an episode that we did a few years ago. It's regarding the deaths of two women in Los Angeles, Christy and Hilda. So you may remember that they basically attended a party and were dumped after either ingesting drugs or taking drugs. They were basically dumped and left to die. There's a man who was involved and who was eventually arrested called David Brian Pierce, and he's being convicted of their murders. You may remember the episode because basically every photo of him, he's making like a pouting duck lips face, and we commented about that at the time. He was
a real fuckboy, but like way too old to be a fuckboy. Probably wore a lot of Ed Hardy, like way past the time where Ed Hardy was cool.
Yeah.
Just a real loser.
He's a real creep.
But thinks highly of himself, you can tell.
Yeah. So the jury found him guilty of 7 charges of sexual assault for unrelated prior charges, so not related to Hilda and Christie's cases, 3 counts of forcible rape, 2 counts of sexual penetration by use of force, and 1 count each of rape of an unconscious person and sodomy by use of force. And those incidents took place between 2007 and 2020. And he'll be sentenced on March 13. So he's facing up to life in prison. So that is a great outcome. Yeah, I find it quite interesting because I've seen photos of him in the court now, and obviously he's older, but he has definitely not improved himself while he's been in prison, which I'm like, that's good karma for you. Someone who always prided himself on being, you know, apparently attractive and hot and
and what he thought was attractive.
Yeah, is now not. Absolutely not. Yeah. Where he was never really before anyway, but he's now absolutely not his best self.
Yeah. No duck lips in court either. So.
Well, every I think it's probably forced, but every photo I've seen he's wearing a surgical mask, so he might be having some duck lip withdrawals.
Yeah, but all around, he was a disgusting person. I remember when this story kind of first broke, so many other women came forward about how he either sexually assaulted them, tried to sexually assault them, made them uncomfortable, tried to drug them, like so many horrible things. So it's just nice to like finally see people who get away with this so often be held accountable for what they do.
Yeah, and I would be surprised if he gets a lenient sentence. I feel like he's a piece of garbage, and it seems like the judge knows it as well. So I would probably expect the maximum sentence or a very long sentence at the least.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about the death of Amy Harwick. She was a marriage and family therapist, and she was also a sex therapist and a writer. She was very like educated, had a lot going for her, was well known in her field, I would say. She was 38 years old when she was murdered in Los Angeles on February 15th, 2020, by her ex-boyfriend, Gareth Pursehouse.
Amy was kind of well known in her field. She had a bit of an online presence. She was very active on social media at the time she died. And then obviously when she died, what happened immediately wasn't clear. So it was kind of a very real-time case. It's not something that you just get one article on. There was a lot that you could follow as it happened in real time. I think we definitely had a blog back when it was happening. We've got a brand new blog as well for it. But yeah, you may have been familiar. There was a lot of articles, I guess, because of her celebrity connections, which we'll get into. But it was quite a high profile real-time case at the time.
Yeah, because of her position, like her job, which obviously she's a therapist, like it's a well-respected job. But I think a lot of headlines and media outlets were like sex therapists like murdered, and it was very sensationalized. Of course, she is a pretty woman also, which people were using, and sex therapist, and she dated a celebrity, which we'll get into. So it was easy to like spectacularize.
Yeah, sensationalized. She had a lot of also connections within kind of the adult film industry or the adult industry, so a lot of articles played on that. I guess it was a case that had a few different aspects to what we usually hear about, which is why the media ran with a lot of that.
Yeah. The media response reminds me a little of like Kat West.
Yeah. Because she was what, only one, was it OnlyFans? I don't know, whatever. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like OnlyFans, maybe before it was OnlyFans, yeah, but like same type of thing.
This is the Playa del Rey man accused of pushing an ex-girlfriend off the third-story balcony of her Hollywood Hills home.
I mean, people look at me like I'm a crazy person when I do this, but I don't care.
Police say Gareth Pursehouse murdered famed sex therapist Dr. Amy Harwick this weekend, a man Harwick had a restraining order against until 2 weeks ago when it expired.
He was a stalker. When they broke up, like he didn't take it well at all. You'd do stupid stuff, say stupid stuff, and you tell him, like, move on, dude, leave it alone. And he wouldn't.
Pursehouse was arrested at his Playa del Rey home. Detectives now learning she'd recently expressed fear about her former boyfriend. But Harwick was most recently connected not to Pursehouse, but to Price is Right host Drew Carey. They were briefly engaged in 2018. In a statement, he reveals he's overcome with grief, even posting on social media saying, "I hope you're lucky enough to have someone in your life that loves as much as she did." Harwick was known for her career as a sex and family therapist, offering relationship advice off and online.
A person could act out a little bit more, be manipulative to get their partner's attention, especially if they feel like there's going to be a rejection.
Tanisha Offray of Shepherd's Door Domestic Violence Resource Center says the system to protect victims is broken.
A lot of these guys are not threatened by that piece of paper. They're not. They will play the system. They'll wait until they have their opportunity, and then they'll do whatever they feel they need to do to seek revenge.
Offray says they do what they can to help victims of domestic violence, but a complete overhaul of the restraining order system is vital.
All right, so we'll get into some background info. Amy was born Amy Nicole on May 20th, 1981, and she was adopted when she was 11 months old by her parents, Tom and Penny Harwick. She also has a brother named Chris, who was also adopted.
Yeah, so there's a 48 hours episode on Amy's case. So we've included in this episode a few kind of quotes and excerpts from that, and that this excerpt is from that show.
Aaron Moriarty, who's the host, said, "Do you remember the first time you saw your little girl?" And her mother, Penny, said, "Oh, I absolutely remember, kind of like a fairy tale. Here's a beautiful little girl sitting there, and she's going to come home with us and be our daughter. It was wonderful." I'll just say. And then her dad said, "And believe it or not, she had a head full of curls." And her mom said, "And her hair was honey colored. By the time she was four, it was so dark." Penny also spoke about how Amy reacted when they adopted her brother, Chris. She said she was okay with it for a couple of weeks. And then she said, "Well, when is he going back?" And I said, "Well, he's not. He's your brother. He's going to be here forever."
Seems like a pretty standard response for most oldest kids.
Kids are like, "I've had enough." Amy was raised in Lansdale, Pennsylvania, and she graduated from North Penn's high school in 1999. In 2001, when she was 20 years old, she moved to Los Angeles, and she completed her undergraduate studies at California Polytechnic State University. She went on to receive her Master of Arts in Clinical Psychology from Pepperdine University. She also obtained her Doctorate of Human Sexuality from the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality. So, like we said, she's very well educated and took her career in education very seriously. Amy's family have said that she loved music, including Tori Amos, Depeche Mode, and Christina Perri. What a mix. Amy also had many hobbies and interests. She did some modeling, wrote a book called The New Sex Bible for Women, The Complete Guide to Sexual Self-Awareness and Intimacy. She also created podcasts, and she loved exercising. She even released a training video. And she also loved horror movies and taxidermy. Her family and friends have said that she was quirky and fun. Her favorite foods included cookies, cheesesteaks, pork rolls, and Lebanon bologna. What an array. I don't even know what Lebanon bologna is.
Neither do I. I've got no idea.
Amy also had a cat at the time of her death named Marquis de Chat. Like it's French, so hopefully that's close enough.
Yeah, she kind of had like, I don't know, I don't want to get shot down for this, but she kind of had like a gothic vibe. Like she had a vampy vibe more so, I guess. Like she had dark hair. She was always red lips. You know, I've seen photos of her house. It's very vampish, if that kind of gives you a picture of who she was.
She reminds me of, who's the burlesque?
Yeah, Dita Von Teese.
Yeah, Dee DeVantis, yeah. Like a similar look vibe to Dee DeVantis.
Yeah.
So at the time of her death, Amy was well-known in her community in West Hollywood. She had just started working with Pineapple Support, which is an organization of sex work-positive mental health professionals. The organization was started after there were many suicides within the adult industry. Another LA sex therapist said she really, really wanted to help society, and she had so many great ideas to reach out to underserved communities. Amy had a website that's now been taken down, but according to that site, she worked with clients who suffered from a range of conditions, including anxiety, depression, sexually exploited teenagers, juvenile sex offenders, children with trauma, court-mandated adults, divorce, sexual identity issues, chronic pain, sex education, bipolar disorder, displaced adolescents, and domestic violence. So, like, I don't know, just kind of amazing, I guess, to see how many things she tackled and how she was really an advocate for a lot of people who are kind of like passed over and tossed aside by society who still need help. Yeah. Wish that there was like more people like her around today.
Definitely.
In terms of her relationship history, after high school, she met a man named Tommy Decker, who was a drummer from LA. They met at a local concert and they began dating long distance. And this is actually what prompted her to move to LA in the first place. So Amy and Tommy got married, but they divorced after 3 years. So around 2009, Amy started dating a man named Gareth Pursehouse. They met at a Hollywood party where she was working as a hostess to pay her way through school. One of her friends named Grace Stanley said he was very loud, fun, smiley. He is one of the nightlife photographers. It was very clear that he was taken by her because he would always want to take a lot of pictures of her. Another one of her friends named Rudy Torres spoke about his initial impression of Gareth. He said, if you would meet him, you would think he's charming, a little goofy, kind of dorky. They dated for about 18 months before things started to go downhill. A friend named Marcy Mendoza said Amy and Gareth lived together and he was very possessive over her. He wanted to know where she was at all times. Who was she with? He was always checking her phone. I feel like he probably felt like insecure because she comes off as like a very confident, doing her own thing woman, yeah. You know? Amy ended up taking out multiple restraining orders on Gareth, with the first being filed in 2011. She had a temporary restraining order that year, but apparently didn't attend a follow-up hearing at the Superior Court, and the order was dismissed for a lack of prosecution, and electronic docket shows. Another was filed in 2012. In April that year, there was a hearing on whether to extend the protective order. Both Amy and Gareth gave evidence. So according to the New York Daily News, Amy alleged that there were multiple arguments in which Gareth choked her, suffocated her, pushed her against walls, kicked her, dropped her to the ground with force restrained her, slammed her head into the ground, and punched her with a closed fist. She filed the first order after she claimed that he pushed her from a car. She wrote that he broke into her apartment multiple times, including one occasion in which he smashed 10 picture frames on her door and told her things will get worse. The day after, Gareth reportedly returned to apologize, taping about 4 dozen roses to the entrance of Amy's house. So, like, typical abuser behavior. The
yeah. Love abusive, bombing.
Yeah, and then bringing the roses to be like, I'm so sorry. The judge granted her request for the protection order. But despite the orders, Gareth continued to stalk Amy, of course. Amy told friends that she believed Gareth had broken into her new apartment. Her friend said it was very specific. Photo frames were smashed and her laptop was wiped clean. The friend said she tried going to the police and they said, well, there's no proof it was him. Her friend said that Amy was terrified. I hate that. There's no proof it was him.
Hmm.
I get it, but it's also like, ugh.
Who else would it be? Yeah, I know.
A friend of Amy's told KTLA that Gareth was a constant thing that she talked about, that she was afraid of this particular guy, and it was always something that kind of followed her. It scared her enough to tell friends that, gee, I think I should get some mace or pepper spray. Her friend said he kept finding her, kept seeking her out. He didn't respect the end of their relationship. Another friend said she really was worried at that point. She said, if anything happens to me, it's him. Her friend Rudy told KABC that Gareth was a stalker, adding, when they broke up, he didn't take it well at all. He'd do stupid stuff and say stupid stuff. You tell him, move on, dude, leave her alone, and he wouldn't. The protective order expired in 2015. And in terms of background for Gareth, he worked as a photographer as well as a software engineer and developer, but that's all we really know about his background. So in the summer of 2017, Amy met comedian Drew Carey at a party. I think everyone knows who Drew Carey is, hopefully. not going to explain. He posted a photo of them together on Instagram with the caption, "The face of a lottery winner." And the couple became engaged within a year of meeting. And not to be like a judgy, like judge a book by its cover, but it does seem like a very interesting couple, like
yeah,
on the outside.
Kind of the odd couple a little bit. You know, he was quite a, like, obviously dynamics, like, whatever, but he was quite a bit older.
By 2018, though, the couple had split and called off their engagement. Their split was said to be amicable. So this was like what kind of some of the headlines grasped onto, like Drew Carey's sex therapist ex-fiance murdered. So it was very easy to cause a ruckus with the headlines.
Yeah.
On January 16th, 2020, Amy ran into Gareth at a public event, the XBiz Adult Film Awards. The event was being held at the JW Marriott in Los Angeles. She was an attendee and he had been assigned to photograph the event, and the event was hosted by Stormy Daniels. Her friend said Amy hadn't seen Gareth in 8 years, and when he was on the red carpet, she noticed him taking photos. When he saw her, he made a beeline for her and started yelling, screaming at the top of his lungs, "You've ruined my life." How stressful, like, all these years later, and he's still just lurking around.
And even how unprofessional of him. Like, he was there working the event,
working,
taking the photos, and then to have, like, this mental break where he's screaming at her at a work event is just shows you
total
how
red flag.
He was. Yeah.
Amy's mother, Penny, spoke about the incident. She said he called her a bitch and he just told her she ruined his life, and she just told me how she was afraid because he was crying and causing a huge scene. And Amy said to her mom, "Mom, I went into therapist mode. I just tried to calm him." Amy tried to calm Gareth down for an hour and she left the event very worried and stressed. Some of Amy's friends have spoken to the media about the situation. A friend named Hernando said it was the absolute worst possible luck. He said the meeting with Gareth seemed to reignite his obsessive preoccupation with her. Another friend said Amy had recounted that when Gareth saw her, he just went ballistic and lost it, and he made a scene. She was very scared. Apparently, Amy said, "What am I going to do? I let my roommate know. I have home security," like just listing ways to kind of protect herself or have some security.
Yeah.
Adult film actress Jasmine St. Clair said, "Gareth knew Amy was going to be at XBiz. He stalked her there and he went batshit crazy. His behavior was abusive and threatening. He was yelling and screaming. Amy told me after the incident that she was scared he would show up at her home. She went to the police, but they didn't take it seriously. He was really obsessive over her, controlling." The district attorney, Victor Avila, would later speak about the incident. Said 8 years by happenstance, they bumped into each other. He goes into this angry, emotional tailspin and tells her she ruined his life. Amy's friends have said that Gareth became angry after Amy rebuffed his attempts to get in touch with her after they ran into each other at the awards. He left her a voicemail that said, "I have so much I need to say. Please give me a chance to just say it. Please," crying. "Please." Amy sent texts to friends and an email to herself outlining that she was scared of Gareth. Her friend said he kept texting her. He left voicemails, like, just crying. Eventually, she just had to block him. And again, she was fearful for her safety. Just before Valentine's Day 2020, Amy made this post on her Instagram. It's kind of like a picture quote. It says, "You cannot move on until you accept this. You will not receive closure in every situation, but you can create it for yourself. Most of what other people do is about them, not you. Some things cannot be explained. Some people won't apologize because they can't. You cannot change people, no matter how much you think they need to change. People change themselves." And she wrote the caption said, "With Valentine's Day coming up, many people may be reflecting on past relationships more often than not. When a relationship ends, one or both partners may feel that they have not had what they feel is closure. Moving on, moving forward, and taking care of yourself after the end of a relationship often means accepting that you may not have the ideal closure. Making peace with this takes time." So it seemed pretty relevant to what she was going to.
Yeah. She was very active on social media. So she made that post, I think, which, because for me it's a little bit hard because of the time zones, but I'm pretty sure she made that post on the 12th, and then she made another post on the 13th and one on the 14th, which was essentially the day that she ended up dying. But her handle on Instagram is Dr. Amy Hardwick, A-M-I-E, Hardwick. Her Instagram is still open and public if you want to go and have a look at the kind of posts that she was making right before she died. All right, so on February 14th, Valentine's Day in 2020, Amy went to a burlesque show with her friends. She left her house at around 7 p.m. Amy was living with her flatmate at the time, a man named Michael Herman. Michael has spoken to the media about what happened that night. He said that he remembered waking up at around 9 p.m. because he heard a sound. LAPD homicide detective Scott Masterson spoke about that and said, Michael told us that he thought Amy had came home and dropped a dish or a glass or a plate or something. He didn't think much of it. I've seen some other reports where Michael said that Amy's cat sometimes knocked things over. So like it didn't sound like something that he had to rush out and check. He just thought something had fallen, essentially.
Like a little accident.
Yes. Police, though, think this is the time that Gareth broke the front doors to the house and entered the house to wait for Amy. There was a man matching Gareth's description that was seen on a neighbor's camera. The man was wearing gloves and a cap. He approached the camera and moved it. There's actually some stills of that, like you can see the man with the glove reaching out to kind of turn the camera around. Basically, and it's so creepy. He did such a sloppy job because he was seen on CCTV a bunch of times.
I just couldn't imagine coming home and having someone in your house waiting for you to attack you. It's so scary.
Detective Masterson said, it shows his premeditation and his plan in the event. Has he been there before? Most likely, because he knew exactly where he was going to hop the fence, which is creepy. Super creepy. So police believe that after Gareth broke in, he lay in Amy's bed waiting for her to come home. Aww. And I think they believe this because there's a photo of her bed, which I've put on the blog, and like someone has been under the covers. So I guess maybe she didn't make a bed in the morning, but they are saying that basically she went out that night and he got in her bed and lay there and wait for her, which is disgusting.
Yeah.
When Amy got home just after 1 a.m., Gareth attacked. Michael, the roommate, said, I remember thinking this is just so much worse than any horror movie I've ever seen. I was woken up by screaming, like blood-curdling scream, and I yelled, Amy, and I heard choking right after that. So Michael was in a downstairs bedroom when the attack happened. He said, I knew for a fact there was somebody up there after that. I'm trying to listen. You don't know for sure what was going on. Was he acting alone? Was there more than one person? I start rushing to look for my phone. I can't even imagine the panic because obviously you'd want to help.
Oh my God, I'd be so scared.
But then self-preservation, you don't know what's going on. Like it would be such a chaotic, confusing, tumultuous time.
Yeah, it sounds horrible, but like I can't say I would like rush out there to be a hero. You're scared. You don't know if this person has guns.
Yeah.
At least the smart thing to do realistically would be like call for help first in case something does happen to you.
So Michael started looking for his phone, but he couldn't find it. He ran to a neighbor's. Yeah, I know. What are the odds? He ran to a neighbor's house to get help, but nobody answered the door because obviously this is, you know, 1 a.m. ish in the morning. I'm not answering the door at 1 a.m. if anyone's knocking.
Yeah.
There's actually CCTV of him doing that. So that kind of proves that his story is for real. Detective Masterson spoke about the attack. He said she, as in Amy, walks into her bedroom and I think she just froze in shock and fear. And the one thing that was on the bed was her phone. So I think she actually threw her phone at him and started to run out of the bedroom, and she's screaming and they're fighting and they're wrestling. So Michael eventually found someone on the street and used their phone to call 911. He told the dispatchers, I was downstairs. I heard screaming. I know she's been attacked. I heard her going to the ground. Gareth was seen on camera climbing over Amy's fence and running away. We've got a clip of it in the blog. Like he's literally, you can see he's jumped the fence. He's kind of down, you know, when you jump and you kind of fall a little bit.
Yeah.
He's down. He's got sneakers on. He's not doing a great job of concealing himself. So the address of the house was 2086 Mound Street in Los Angeles. There's a Zillow listing if you want to kind of check out the scene and the house and what the layout of the house was. There's obviously multiple stories. There's a balcony. It kind of gives you more of an idea of how far, what actually happened and what the scene would have looked like.
Yeah.
So police got to the home just after 1 a.m. Amy was found on the ground outside the house under a third floor balcony, and she had fallen around 20 feet. She had defensive wounds on her hands and her arms. The glass doors in the front yard were broken. black beads from her crucifix necklace. Black beads from her crucifix. I can't say it. Black beads from her crucifix necklace were scattered around the room, and there was a syringe filled with liquid found on her balcony. So there's actually a photo, or like a crime scene photo, of this syringe. I don't know what heroin looks like, but it does look to me like, you know, heroin, they always say is like that brown coppery color, maybe. I could be wrong, but that's what I would assume it would be too. But basically a syringe with liquid was found on the balcony. Amy was taken to hospital, where she passed away hours later. At the time of her death, it was reported in the media that she had significant injuries consistent with a fall. The LAPD said the investigation revealed possible evidence of a struggle in the upstairs, as well as forced entry to the residence. A canvas of the area located further evidence of an intruder entering the property and leaving after the murder. So Amy's death entry is on the Los Angeles Medical website. Los Angeles Medical Examiner website to this day. It basically says that her place of death was hospital, manner was homicide, and the causes were blunt force injuries of the head and torso, and that she also showed evidence of manual strangulation. So kind of indicating that she was strangled before she was thrown over the balcony, which both of those things caused her death. So around the time of Amy's death, Gareth had been active on social media. A lot of it's been taken down now, but thankfully it's been recorded. The internet never forgets. So the day that he went to Amy's house was February 14th. That day he was tweeting about politics. He wrote about, he said, "I can't figure out why gerrymandering isn't a federal crime." And he commented on Attorney General Bill Barr's ABC interview about President Trump's tweets interfering with his job by saying, "Then why isn't Barr prosecuting Trump for impeding justice?" Basically, he's doing a whole bunch of political tweeting on the day that he was carrying this out.
Yeah.
His last tweet was made on the day of Amy's murder, and that was in response to a comedian. The comedian said that he had received 400,000 views on his latest YouTube video in less than a week. Gareth tweeted back, "I've been special since I was 5. No views." so pathetic.
What a loser.
Yeah. He also tweeted that day, which is just kind of a random tweet, "You can't get fit without that new gym clothing, but they won't give you that gear until you're fit. So tough titties, bucko."
Cool.
Yeah, cool.
Probably thought he was like so clever and funny.
Yeah, and so intellectual, doing his political tweeting and just, yeah.
Loser.
Police, as we mentioned, initially believed that the syringe they found was filled with heroin. This is a quote from the 48 Hours show. Erin Moriarty said, "When officers first saw that, they thought that this was some kind of drug deal." And the detective said, "Yeah, or maybe she was using drugs or fell over," and they don't know. There is, in the 48 Hours episode, there's a body cam excerpt where basically the police are questioning Michael, the roommate. The police officer says, "Sir, do you know her history of drug use?" And Michael says, "No, she's sober. She doesn't drink. She doesn't even drink." And the officer said, "She doesn't drink," like incredulous. And Michael says, "She doesn't even drink. She's sober." So basically, absolutely no history of drug use. I guess they have to investigate every single possibility, but they did kind of look at that as a possibility that maybe this was some kind of messed up drug deal. But anyway, it turns out that it wasn't even heroin in the end. FBI analysis showed that the syringe was filled with liquid nicotine, and this poison is difficult to detect in someone's system. Detective Masterson said,
almost seems like more dirtbag than heroin.
Yeah. Like, imagine, you know what I mean? Trying, well, he's obviously sought out something that wasn't going to be detected in her system. So
yeah.
Anyway, Detective Masterson said, "Gareth's overall plan would have been to inject her and have Amy pass away, and no one would have been wiser. But the autopsy revealed that Amy was never injected with the poison. So obviously Gareth's plan failed. Whatever he tried to do couldn't happen."
CBS would that amount kill you, you think?
Well, I don't know.
Maybe. I guess. So. I guess if you inject it right into your veins, it's probably not great.
CBS reporter Lena Nguyen said, "So now it appears he couldn't inject her. His plan failed and he resorted to violence." Detective Masterson said, "He grabbed her and ripped her necklace off her neck. Gareth's choking her. She's fighting for her life. I believe he picks her up. He walked to the balcony edge and just dropped her to the bottom of the patio," which is horrible. Poor girl, like fighting to the end for her life, and then just drops her over a three-story
balcony. Like a brutal,
balcony.
Scary, drawn-out death.
So Gareth ended up being arrested just 14 hours after Amy's death, and police have spoken about his arrest. The detective said, "You could tell he was playing the old, 'Oh, what's this about? Why do you want to talk?' when they went to his house." And he said, "Yeah, I know Amy, yeah." And he's basically saying, "Oh, he was at his own house the whole night. He hadn't been anywhere." Gareth had a black eye and he told police that it happened during a home renovation accident. The detective said, I think you better get a contractor. If you get hold of a power tool, you're going to be in real trouble. So there's a photo of him after he was arrested. He was arrested on suspicion of murder, but he was released on a $2 million bond. He was rearrested and officially charged with murder a few days later, as well as a count of first-degree residential burglary with a special circumstance of lying in wait, making him eligible for the death penalty. Detective Masterson said he had scratches on his neck, chest, and arms. He had a large bruise on the inside of his bicep, which looked to me like a bite mark. So she really, really, really fought to the very end, biting him, scratching him. She's a very petite girl. He looks like, I think he's 6'2", I've read. A big guy. She really, really tried her hardest. District attorney said the theory is that once Gareth Pursehouse was blocked, detectives believe he prepared and began planning her death. It blocked, as in blocked from contacting her after the adult business, after the adult industry awards, where he kind of lost his mind.
Yeah.
The DA said all these actions show he was going to, in a way, punish her for rejecting him and that he thought about how to do it. The deputy district attorney said, I think Gareth decided to do this on Valentine's Day on purpose. I think Gareth decided to kill Amy on a day that symbolized love and couples, and I think it was just poetic justice in his opinion. So there are photos of the scene. You can kind of see where he broke in. It looks like he's broken a glass door pane to gain access to the house. So there are some scene photos online if you are interested in looking them up, and there's some on the blog. Michael, the roommate, has spoken about the survivor's guilt that he's dealt with since Amy's death. He said, she's gone and I'm still here. But Amy's parents said, Penny said, oh my gosh, he did the exact right thing. And Tom, Amy's dad, said he made all the right decisions, which I absolutely agree with. He did, you know, you don't ever know how you're going to act in one of those situations. He did as much as he possibly could.
I hate how people always like blame and bully that person. Like, they're going through enough as it is, and you don't know how you would react when that's happening.
Yeah. So after Amy passed away, Drew Carey made a statement to the media. Like, by this stage, they've been broken up for 2 years, so they weren't in a relationship at the time, but he still made a statement. He said,
Amy, I feel like he felt like he had to because the media kept like dragging him into it. The media
was like, Drew Carey's ex-fiance dead. Like, yeah. He said, Amy and I had a love that people are lucky to have once in a lifetime. She was a positive force in the world, a tireless and unapologetic champion for women and passionate about her work as a therapist. He would also later say, after Amy's murder, I took a week off. Really, I couldn't function. My first day back, we taped the high school show for Kids Week. I believe he's talking about The Price is Right. We taped the high school show for Kids Week. It was all high school kids. It was my very first show back and everyone knew what happened to me. So I took the time during the break to talk to these kids. He said, I wish he never did it. I wish he never met her. I really try to practice instant forgiveness and unconditional love. The closest you can get to that, the better you are. Amy's friend Hernando also spoke about what we've spoken about, the sensationalist kind of media angle that was taken with this case. He said, she did everything she could to protect herself and this person still sought her out and was violent towards her. That is what people, I hope, are going to see, not the sensationalism of her dating Drew Carey or being a Hollywood sex therapist, but that our system is not protecting women. Mm. On April 16th, 2020, Gareth pled not guilty to the charges. His trial began in August 2023. The DA told the court, Dr. Amy Harwick was murdered by defendant Gareth Pursehouse because he was obsessed with her. He strangled her, lifted her up over the balcony, and dropped her to her death. Amy's parents sat through every second of the trial, even though a lot of the information and evidence was very graphic. They were there every single minute of every single day. Gareth's defense attorney, Evan Franzel, said that Gareth had been sent into a deep, debilitating depression after his encounter with Amy at the Adult Film Awards. He told the court that Gareth went to Amy's house with the intention being to talk to her. Gareth's attorney also told the court that Gareth had intended to kill himself with a nicotine syringe.
Sure.
The trial ran for 10 days. The prosecution and defense basically argued back and forth about if Gareth had intended to kill Amy or not. There was never any doubt that he killed Amy. It was basically what had actually happened that night. And if it was, you know, a premeditated murder, that was the argument that they had.
This is one of those things where I'm like, how could they even argue it? He literally broke into her house, waited for her,
yeah,
strangled her, beat the shit out of her, and then threw her off of the balcony.
And had documented domestic violence issues in the past, like legally documented protective orders. It's just,
she had a restraining order against him. Yeah.
I guess they have to try. In the state's closing arguments, the email that Amy had sent to herself about Gareth was read out. And this was so smart of her to do that, because this was another way that she documented, you know, what had been happening. And they said at the trial it was all the closest that she could have gotten to testifying herself about what had happened.
Yeah, and just a side note, you should do that with anything, like anything sketchy that happens to you, like something like this, work-related, like anything where you just feel bad about it, put it in writing and email it to yourself, because it is really great advice and great to have if you ever need it.
And I also feel like do it at the time when it happens. Don't think I'll do it next week when I get a chance. Do it
while everything's
and fresh in your mind, you know, so you can remember the most details that you can.
And it might feel silly, but if you think about it, like no one's ever going to see it but you.
Yeah, and you've got it there just if you need it. So the email they read out said, "Tonight I felt very scared." So obviously tonight, this is when she's referring to the January incident where Gareth lost his mind on the red carpet. She said, "Tonight I felt very scared. Gareth came up behind me and started screaming. I'm pretty nervous that I'm more on his radar now. It terrifies me that he's obsessed with me for 9 years, thinks about me every day. He's focused on harming me." So the jurors had three choices in the case: murder in the first degree, murder in the second degree, or the lesser charge of voluntary manslaughter. They ended up finding Gareth guilty of first degree murder with the special circumstance of lying in wait. And rightly so, he ended up being sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, which I think was absolutely the right sentence in this case. He was a heinous man who made her life hell for so many years and then brutally, brutally murdered her, you know. Absolutely the right choice, in my opinion.
Yeah, agreed.
So Amy's parents have spoken about the hardest part of losing their daughter. Penny said it's just the absence and the quiet. Tom said just one huge void. And Penny said, "I miss our adventures." Tom said, "We miss you, Amy. Every day we think of you." And Penny said, "We're not the same people we were before, but we keep trying to be." Erin Moriarty asked them, "Anything you wish you had been able to say to her?" And Penny said, "Just to tell her one more time that I love her. I know she knew it, but I know she knew it, but I wanted to be able to say it." So that is the whole case chronologically. Obviously, I think that Gareth will be in jail for the rest of his life. Hopefully, there haven't been, you know, it's been now nearly 5 years since Amy died. So the media kind of reporting around it has died down. Around Valentine's Day every year, there seems to be an article that pops up that kind of rehashes the case. And a lot of, like, the CBS thing was about it being like a Valentine's murder, which I do agree that's probably why he picked the date. It was symbolic for him, you know, basically making a point that if he couldn't be in a couple relationship with her, that he would, you know, do what he wanted.
Maybe he was even thinking like she could be out with someone else, and that like got him all riled up about it too. Or she was talking to someone else.
Like, you would think if someone is out on Valentine's Day, they're probably out with a partner or a love interest or something like that. Like, she was said that she was at a burlesque show with friends. I don't think he knew that. He probably assumed she was out on some date. Maybe he was hoping she'd come home with a lover. I don't know. Like, who even knows what was going through his mind. But to pick the Valentine's Day date, I do agree, is a very calculated plan.
Yeah, it's just sad to see, like, someone who is such a bright light and really trying to make a difference in society and trying to help communities and people who are so underserved, and like women in general, be snuffed out by like what she was fighting against. It seems like just such a disgusting loser who offered no value to society to take out such like a great, seemingly great person.
Yeah, I just like, this was honestly years and years and years of stalking, relentless stalking. I feel like maybe she thought for a while it was over, like she dated Drew Carey. There seems to have been a bit of a period where she was able to distance herself from Gareth, but then that January 2020 incident was the catalyst for him just becoming obsessed all over again, not leaving her alone. I just, like, it's like, and you know, we always speak about how women are failed by the justice system and the legal system, and they're not protected. In this case, I think that she was, but it just happened so quickly in the end. Like, it wasn't like it was happening during the times where she filed the protective orders. She filed those, they ended up expiring, and then there kind of was a lull, whereas there was nothing, like, I don't feel there was any real failure in 2020. It just happened too quickly for her to be able to do anything about it again, which she shouldn't have had to, I agree. Like, he, you know, he's, I'm sure if he did break into a house, and there's other things he should have been maybe arrested and put away for, but it just happened so quickly at the end in 2020 that there wasn't enough time for her to act on it.
Yeah, it just sucks because you hear stories like this again and again and again of women who know they're being stalked, are like, this guy's going to kill me. I'm afraid every day. He won't leave me alone. And like they do what they can, but like there's no real protection. I don't even know what the answer is besides maybe like mental health for men who act like this. But it's like, yeah, duh. But it's just sad when it's like they know this is happening and that they're like, here's a restraining order. But like a piece of paper, when they have their heart set on it, it's not going to stop them. Like if they're going to murder you, they're not going to be like, whoa, 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 well, this restraining order is going to stop me.
I am surprised. Like I haven't really been able to find much information after the protective orders in 2015 and in between that and 2020. Like I wonder if anything happened when she started dating Drew Carey because she would have been in the media then. Did that piss Gareth off more? Like I just wonder. It just seems like there was very, very little contact for that five-year period until he saw her again and then kind of went off the edge.
I wonder if he was like dating someone, had a distraction maybe, and then like that went downhill and he just kind of like turned his focus back on her when he saw her again.
I always feel bad when I speak about people's physical looks, but I feel like in this case it's kind of relevant because Gareth was a relatively good-looking man. At one point he was tall, had kind of like a muscular build. Like I'm sure he probably could have dated women or whoever if he wanted to. Like it's not like he was someone who would have struggled to find another relationship if he was, you know, mentally stable. It's a very, very sad case. I feel so sorry for her. The terror she must have felt that night, just coming home after a night out, probably had a great night out with friends, coming home ready for bed, and then to find this creep, repulsive, pathetic loser in your bed is just horrible.
Horrifying. So scary.
Yeah. And this also, too, this case, like I know 5 years ago is a decent amount of time away now, but it's still recent. Like it's a case that happened in the time of CCTV, you know, of techno.
Yeah.
Things being able to be tracked, it just takes one unhinged person to have a plan and a few hours and that's it.
Yeah, and that's why it's so scary because what could she have done?
Yeah.
Nothing. So that is that sad ending to a sad podcast.
There is a lot out there. Like I find Amy's life really interesting. Her social media, as I mentioned, is all still open. Mm-hmm. Even like when you look at her Facebook, she'd just been trying to sell. I think she must have ridden motorbikes or some type of bikes because she was selling like motorcycle leathers. It's always interesting just to see someone's life and have an insight into who they were before, you know, something happened like this happens to them. So I recommend it. I've linked it all on the blog if you want to go and check it out and learn a little bit more about who Amy was.
Yeah, I'm glad that they left her Instagram and all that up because a lot of times like people take it down or get like memorialized or like the family takes it down.
Yeah.
But I feel like it is like a kind of like a testament to who she was and what she cared about. And there's a lot of great posts on there about just like advice. So I think it is really great that that's still up, kind of like a legacy. For her.
Her very last post, which was made on Valentine's Day, it says it's like a big image thing and it says platonic love is important too. She wrote, many people are celebrating love today. Whether you are in a relationship or not, exposure to this could feel overwhelming if you are in an unhealthy relationship, dissatisfied with your relationship status, unhappy in your relationship, or feeling pressured to be in a relationship. I think that Valentine's Day is a wonderful time to be mindful and redirect thoughts about love to platonic love. There is so much cultural emphasis on romantic love, but let's be thankful for the authentic love that we give and receive to friends. So
how nice.
Yeah, lovely. She's got some videos on there. There's some videos of her on YouTube, which I've put on the blog as well. You know, just some of her giving interviews about, you know, therapy issues and things like that. So there's a lot out there if you want to learn more about Amy.
All right. So that is it for this episode. As we said, everything will be on the blog and all the links to her social media and all that if you want to check it out. And that's at truecrimesocietyblog.com. Make sure you're following us on Instagram where we post lots of daily updates on True Crime. Our handle's True Crime Society on there. If you want to check out our personal accounts, mine is stephsum_, Olivia's TCS Olivia, if you want to see what we're up to. And if you want more content from us or ad-free episodes, check us out on Patreon. We do weekly bonus episodes on there, so you'd get 2 episodes a week, all ad-free. Plus, there's like little Patreon chats and its own community, so it's fun to hang out on there. And otherwise, all the usual stuff. You can leave us some nice Spotify comments, some nice reviews, and make sure you're following on whatever platform you listen on, because those are all a big help to us. And if you could share the podcast with your friends, family, share it on your Instagram story, we appreciate all of that so much.
Absolutely.
But that is it for this episode. Is this come out on Valentine's Day?
13th.
Hope everyone has a happy Valentine's Day, whether that's with a significant other or your friends or your pets or your
yourself.
Family or anyone. Yeah, yourself, a self-love,
treat,
self-care
treat yourself
day.
To some candy and a movie or something like that. Just, you know, yeah. Like what
yeah,
Amy
that
said.
That sounds amazing.
Platonic love, even love for yourself, is a great kind of love to have.
Yeah, so true. Yeah. So stay safe out there, everyone. Thanks for listening. Peace out.
See ya.